Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of my MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day, P, at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
You are now listening to the hottest true crime podcast in the streets.
Hello, 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 and thank you for joining us for another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I am Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman, can't you tell, man? Gonna post to it.
What up?
Fran, what is going on, man?
Not much, same old, ain't nothing new.
Yeah. I'm doing good, man. I watched The Night Stalker, four-part documentary on Netflix, which was insane. I heard some people saying it was too graphic. I thought it was, you know, as graphic as you can expect about a horrific serial killer. It was, I feel like it did the job it was supposed to do.
I heard they was comparing, I heard people saying that, and it was like, what else do you want how a serial killer documentary supposed to be?
Yeah. I don't have like a bar for like what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. Yeah. It's like, if that's,
I mean,
vision,
what do you expect to see? You know,
exactly. Especially, yeah, especially the way Richard Ramirez was killing people. I mean, he was shooting people in the face. He was brutally stabbing people. I mean, yeah, he was doing some very gruesome things, you know, and it was like he was a Satanist, you know? So there was this dark undertone to the stuff that he was doing. And that's what the documentary had. It had a very dark undertone. I did not know that he killed and ruined so many people's lives. You know, I mean, he wasn't just killing people. He was raping children. He was sexually assaulting adult women and then killing them. Some women survived. And he was just out doing this for like what they know of over 100. It was like 100. It got up to like 160 days in total. So that's like a half a year. And they say that it's likely based on how he was, his pattern and his speed of which he was committing crimes in that 160-day period, he probably was committing crimes way before that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, he's pretty fucking terrifying. He just, and also he broke so many norms. Like he confounded so many detectives because he would shoot people, stab people, rape kids, and all of those. They had never seen somebody. They were like, there's no way this is the same person.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they were like, a kid got kidnapped and sexually assaulted, and then a woman got raped and murdered, and her husband got shot, you know, 10 blocks away. Those are two separate crimes. It's like, oh no, this dude was just erratic. Like he was just doing anything and everything. It was truly insane. It was a really good documentary though. It was well put together and it's really fucking terrifying, man. Anyways, I have a couple of things that I wanted to get to, but nothing really that I want to get into too deeply because there was some more news of, you know, some people who were sadly killed in medical emergencies with the police. One was from a year ago that's now surfaced and is being made public, and one was, I believe, from either a couple of weeks ago or a month or so ago. So I want to say rest in peace to Eric Parsa from Louisiana and rest in peace to Patrick Warren Sr. from
somewhere in Texas, I believe the Houston area. I don't really know what the solution is. I know that in some states there's public emergency numbers that are there's different than 911. Mm. But public emergencies, they just can't be a one-stop shop, man. I don't know how many more of these stories we have to see where somebody calls for the safety of a loved one. Mm. You know, like I'm calling because my autistic son is going through a medical emergency or my father is having some kind of episode, and clearly sending out armed law enforcement who aren't being trained enough to deal with these situations isn't the answer. I don't know if there needs to be a new phone number. I know that some states are working on that. I believe there's, you know, some cities in Oregon that are doing that. I believe there's some cities in Washington that have a whole different agency of people that come out for those kind of phone calls. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the best thing or the worst. I don't know what the solution is, but clearly this is not working. You know, I mean, there's so many different types of phone calls that these police officers have to answer to, and they can't be expected to know how to handle 100 different scenarios. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not training them enough and you're not paying them enough to know how to do these things. So divvy up the money and disperse the money to other departments who can focus on specific situations. But like I said, rest in peace to Eric Parsa and rest in peace to Patrick Warren Sr. Fran, I have a couple of family members, and also we have a couple of listeners who have been receiving the vaccines.
Okay.
So I'm calling on people. I saw somebody posted that their picture of them getting it and their card and everything. I'm calling on people to continue to share that information because there's still a bunch of misinformation out there. And once people start to get the second, because you have to get it in waves. So you get the first part and then you get the second part. Now it's made its way down to teachers. So I believe they'll be getting their shots, or they've started getting their shots soon and either have the first and are waiting for the second, or about to get the first. I call on people to continue to share that information and share your experience, because that is the best way to eradicate misinformation, you know? So I think that that's great when people share that kind of stuff, because then people can ease their fears of, you know, pictures that they see on Facebook saying, oh, my arm fell off, or whatever goofy shit that people are saying. So if you share that kind of information with the world, you help destroy these stigmas and these fears about getting something that will, in theory and hopefully, speed up the process of us getting back to some semblance of normalcy. Kids being back in schools, you know, nationwide, you know, not having to wear a mask if you don't want to, because it seems like people just can't grasp that, you know, that concept of like, hey man, it's a business, it's privately owned, and we don't want people in here if you don't wear a mask.
Yeah.
It's still people like, no, I don't want to. You can't tell me what to do.
I'm American.
Yeah, that whole thing. So maybe if we eradicate the fears of the vaccine, that'll help us get to a point where we don't have to deal with these people anymore. I wish we just didn't have to deal with them in the sense that they would just put the mask on. But if we could just get to a point where it's like, well, stuff can just open up.
Yeah.
And then we don't have to hear these insufferable people anymore. That would be great. Also, just businesses, bars, you know, restaurants, those all are suffering tremendously right now. And it would be really great if those things could open up and people can save businesses and restaurants that have been around for decades. That would be really awesome. Other than that, I don't really have anything else I want to touch on. So we had a big influx of patrons this week. So this is going to be a long read. I think it was because of the Kit Kat Mukbang video dropped, and I think people wanted to sign on and just kind of see what the hell was going on with that.
Oh, okay.
I believe that's what was happening. So we did get a big influx of patron signups. Hmm. That's right, folks. It's time to celebrate. Up first, we got Nick. The name is Nick, but based on her email, it's Nicole, but it just says Nick. So I want to make sure you know that we're talking to you. You left no last name, so I can't even give you a... Just Nick. Shout out to you, Nick. Hey. Shout out to you, Nick. Up next, we got JoJo B. Shout out to JoJo B. Her picture's black and white. It's very noir. Shout out to you, JoJo B. Up next, we got Danielle S. Shout out to Danielle S. Thank you for supporting and joining the Patreon. She also is one of a few people, as well as JoJo, who signed on for the year.
Round of applause, man.
Full-year subscription. I really want people to know that whenever we see a full-year subscription, it really kicks us in the ass and lets us know that there's people out there that believe in what we're doing and are like, I'm in for the long haul. And that gives us motivation to make sure that we stay on top of putting content out and stay on top of putting out a really good, as best product as we can on the Patreon. So thank you for that
thank you.
Statement of confidence in us. And we appreciate people like Natalie C. and Danielle S. So Natalie C, thank you very much. Also, another person signed on for a year. Up next, we got Stephanie J. Shout out to you, Stephanie J. Much appreciated for the support. Up next, we got Sarah, another person that didn't put a last name. Her email address. I'm not gonna do that. Yeah.
That's probably why they didn't do their last name, because you fucking up.
Well, thank you, Sarah, with no last name. We really appreciate you signing on and helping us out this way. Up next, we got Dan and Ray, 2-for-1 special.
Okay,
they got one Patreon, right, and they signed up for the whole year.
Okay,
shout out to
round
both
of applause.
Y'all. Yeah, round of applause for that too. Yeah. Real quick one. Up next, we got Emily K. Shout out to Emily K. Another year subscription. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Up next, we got Rachel B. Shout out to Rachel B. Another year subscriber. Thank you very much. Much love.
Love it.
Up next, we got Sierra T. Shout out to Sierra T. Thank you very much. I can't really, again, I can't say your last name, but I like it.
They know who they are.
Yeah, you know who they you signed are. Up. You know who, Sierra T, you know who you are. Up next, we got Aaron P. Her picture's of a dog, and I love dogs. Adorable. Thank you, Aaron P., and much appreciated for the support. Up next, we got Yvonne L. Thank you, Yvonne L., for showing us some love and hopping onto the Patreon and supporting. I hope you enjoy the content. Up next, we got Mariah N. Thank you, Mariah N., and shout out to you. I like how you spell the name Mariah. It's with a O. I wonder if she goes by Mo. Up next, we got Naomi M. Shout out to Naomi M. I believe that might be a puppy in her picture as well. And if it's not, I'm sorry if I offended, like, your boyfriend or something like that. Up next, we got Jolia S. Now, Jolia came out and said, I hope that you say my name right. And I believe that I did. I'm confident that I said it right. Jolia. I think that I said it right. If I said it wrong, my apologies. But shout out to you, Jolia S. Thank you very much for the support. Another year subscriber. Shout out to her.
All right, quick one.
Boom, quick one. Up next, we got Debbie R. Shout out to you, Debbie R. Thank you again. Another year subscriber. Thank you for the support. Much appreciated. And then lastly, I'm going to fade this out because I want to make sure she hears this. The last subscriber this week is a woman named Ashley T. I don't want to read her whole last name just because I'm just trying not to do that, because some people are like, you can read mine, and some people are like, don't read mine, so I'm just going to not read anybody's.
Right.
Just blanket. Mm-hmm. But Ashley T. not only subscribed to the Patreon, but she made a donation to a cause that I'm rallying for right now, which I'll get to. It's actually my good vibe story that I want to read, so I'm not going to get into it right now. But Ashley T., thank you very much for not only supporting the Patreon, but also supporting this endeavor that I'm working on, because the cause that you donated to is very close to my heart, and it means a lot to me. And so I really appreciate the donation that you made. And thank you to everybody, really, who subscribed to the Patreon. Or if you made a donation to the cause that I've been promoting on social media, thank you to you as well. It's really awesome. And this platform has been amazing to me. And I want to make sure that I use it with respect and to do as much good as I can. Because, you know, when we started doing this podcast, we were like, man, 100 listeners would be dope. As a matter of fact, like, anybody who listened who didn't know us, where it didn't feel like they were doing us a favor. Because, you know, friend, that's my biggest bugaboo. I hate that more than anything in the world. I don't tell my family I do a podcast. I don't tell many friends that we do a podcast, because I don't want anybody coming up to me, talking to me like they're doing me a solid.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, I downloaded your little podcast, and I listened to it for like 5 minutes. So, you know, you're welcome. I don't like that. So when we started this whole thing off, I was like, if we could get anybody to listen to this who doesn't know who we are and aren't trying to do us a favor, like we're slinging out mixtapes out on the street or something like that, you know, that would be really cool. And now we've built this really amazing platform and these really amazing communities of all these really awesome people from all over the country and all over the world, really. And I want to make sure that having this platform, we take any opportunities that we have to give back when we can. So it's been really awesome to do the digital food drive, and this event that I'll get to at the end has been the most amazing thing that I feel like I've ever been a part of, and it's really awesome. But we'll get to that at the end of the show. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into some fucked up shit. So stick around.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by The Social High Five. In 2020, we all had to adapt to some very unexpected conditions. It was no different for us sports fans. We are all anxiously looking forward to the reopening of sports bars and stadiums. But COVID, flu, and other health risks will still be very real. Now, however, there's an awesome new way for fans to cheer on their team and still keep their hands germ-free. With The Social High Five. Made from a sturdy, light, and easy-to-clean styrene, the Social High Five straps to your hand with ease and allows you to hygienically hand slap after your team scores, makes a big play, and wins the big game.
And I'm really excited about this product, folks. I feel like it has the potential to be the next foam finger, except it has a purpose, you know? I think that this will be such a cool gesture for sports teams of all denominations, whatever sport is listening to this, if you were to give these out to your patrons before the games, just to show a sign that, hey, I know we're opening back up, but we do still want everybody to be mindful and safe and cheer on their team, but do it in the safest way possible without trying to, you know, spread germs and get people sick. So I'm excited about this product being able to sponsor this podcast so we can get the word out there as things start to open back up and sports arenas start to allow people back in some small capacity. Because people aren't going to feel 100% safe for a while. But even steps like this allow you to feel like companies are putting in proper measures and thinking about their patrons when they enter their building. Give the sports fanatic in your life a helping hand with the Social High Five. Just go to socialhighfive.com. That's social, H-I-G-H, the number 5.com. The Social High Five. It's a sanitized celebration. All right, and we are back. Fran, it's my turn to go first this week. Are you ready to indulge in my affirmative murder?
Yeah.
Okay, my affirmative murder this week is the story of Christine Falling. My source was Murderpedia, and here we go. Also, I just wanted to say before I get into this, this actually came about because it feels like every year or so I come across one of those crazy stories where it's my rabbit hole dive was sparked by my grandmother telling me about a story that she read where somebody got bit by a dog, like a friend got bit by a dog, and the couple was like, what the hell? Like, this, our friend babysits our dog all the time. Why did she bite her like that? That's weird. And they just kind of moved on from it.
Yeah.
And they sat on it some more and they were like, that was really weird. Like, we should put like a nanny cam in the house for when next time she babysits to see why she would bite her that way. Mm. And they found out that girl was beating the shit out of their dog whenever she would watch the dog.
Oh, shit.
Now, that's abusing dogs is awful, but I've heard stories of that, of where it's kids, you know, where you hear a video of like the daycare lady is beating the shit out of the kids and they caught her on, you know, hidden camera,
yeah,
tossing the kids all around the playroom and everything like that. So I went down a rabbit hole of that once my grandmother told me that story. And I do this probably like once a year. Once I hear one of these stories about a teddy bear cam or somebody doing this and they picked up their kids and it's like, my kid had bite marks on their back.
Yeah.
Why is that? And the daycare lady or the babysitter's like, I don't know. And then they, you know, the hidden camera reveals that this person's like the most despicable, evil person you'll ever see in your life, like spitting in kids' faces or grabbing them and throwing them to the floor and then being like picking them up weirdly and confusing them. So this story of Christine Falling, I actually picked because of that rabbit hole I went down. I was like, you know what, I want to tell one of these kind of stories this week. Yeah. So that's what this story is about.
That kind of pisses me off.
I don't have kids. You have kids. Yeah. So, and I actually have a question. It's kind of a rhetorical question, but I'll get to it at the end as well. So your experience would come in handy answering a rhetorical question. Christine Slaughter, as is often the case with serial killers.
Slaughter, that's her name?
That's her original name. So, you know, go figure, right? You know, it's already, the signs were already there.
Yeah.
Christine Slaughter, as is often the case with serial killers, had a disruptive and impoverished childhood. She was born in Florida in 1963 to 16-year-old Ann Slaughter and 65-year-old Thomas Slaughter. Falling was developmentally disabled and required a regular dose of medication to control her epileptic seizures and aggression, and was never able to acquire developmental skills beyond those of a sixth grader. While growing up, she would drop cats from lethal heights to test their 9 lives. She would also strangle them as a sign of showing them her love, in quotes.
Okay.
And that's one of the McDonough triads. Like, I mean, you know, so really,
animal cruelty.
Yeah, animal cruelty, you know, at high levels. I mean, just tossing the cat off a fucking roof, that's crazy as shit.
They do land on their feet, though.
They do. It's pretty amazing. My cat has 3 legs, so he doesn't land on his feet as balanced. But
he can jump pretty high.
He can jump pretty high, but getting down is more of a task.
Yeah. What if he go down backwards?
Backwards what?
Like his back feet first.
Oh, jump down back? I've never even seen that. That would be pretty amazing. Submit that to somebody. Like, he just jumped down like a kangaroo, or like he had like his back feet were legs.
He just let his back feet just take all the pressure of him hitting the ground, and then he come down with his one paw in front.
He might do that when we're not looking, man. You know, some Toy Story shit. Like, sometimes the pets do shit they don't do in front of you.
Do you believe that? Do you like run through your head sometimes?
Sometimes it does, yeah, where I'm like, when I'm not here.
Shit come alive.
Yeah. You never know, because sometimes I'll come home and I'll be like, that wasn't like that when I left here.
But I could have sworn I didn't leave that there, but all right.
We'll never know. These are the mysteries of life, Fran. Yeah. We'll never solve these.
Yeah.
At the age of 9, Christine and her sister were placed in a children's refuge in Orlando, Florida, for a year. Due to the extreme poverty of her parents, Falling and her older sister were given up for adoption to the Falling family. Not long after that, the two girls found themselves in a children's home because of their constant conflicts with their adoptive parents. At the age of 12, Falling left the children's home. 2 years later, she married a man 10 years older than her. The marriage soon collapsed after a series of violent encounters between the couple. After the breakup, she lapsed into a bizarre hypochondriac phase, going to the hospital 50 times for the reasons such as red spots, vaginal bleeding, and snake bite.
Like in a year or?
No, like back to back, like just in succession, like boom, 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 boom. They're like, what are you doing here again? I got bit by a snake. And they never had, they could never solve. They're like, well, here's some iodine, I guess, yeah. And leave. Like there were never any stays. She just came in. They were like, we can't do anything for that. You have your period. That's not why you come to the hospital.
Yeah.
Please leave. And then she would come right back the next week. Doctors rarely found any treatable symptoms. Despite the fact that Falling was apparently suffering from mental illness, she gained a reputation as a good babysitter who deeply cared for children and was reasonably reliable in her habits. However, at the age of 17, Falling began to covertly attack and murder the children who had been placed in her care. On February 25th, 1980, Cassidy Johnson, a 2-year-old girl who had been in Falling's care, was rushed to the local doctor suffering from life-threatening symptoms presumed to be caused by encephalitis. Now, encephalitis is just brain inflammation.
Okay.
It is treatable, and it's not life-threatening most of the times, I believe. And it also is pretty rare. It's only like 200,000 cases a year worldwide. So this is a very, like, unexpected type of thing. Mm-hmm. You get it from like animal bites.
Mm.
It's almost like Lyme disease or, you know, in the rabies family, I guess, maybe. Yeah. But it is treatable if you get to a doctor. However, when the child died 3 days later, an autopsy was ordered. The examination disclosed that Johnson had actually succumbed to the blunt force trauma of the skull. The results of the autopsy spawned an immediate investigation, and Falling was quickly interviewed by police. She claimed that the child had toppled out of her crib and fallen unconscious to the floor when Falling was out of the room. However, law enforcement personnel did not believe her story.
Me either.
Yeah. It's too easy. So, oh, I wasn't there. She just fell on her head.
How old was she again?
The baby?
Yeah.
3. Yeah, she was 3 years old, and she said, oh, she fell out of her crib. Unfortunately, there was no evidence to contradict Falling's version of what happened to the child, and the matter was not pursued further.
What?
So, like, I mean, we don't think it was encephalitis, but we can't prove that it wasn't, so have a nice day, I guess. Case closed.
That's crazy. A crib is maybe, like, 4 feet high.
Yeah, but then a baby falling right on their head?
What, a 3-year-old, though? If it was a 1-year-old, a newborn or something.
You know better than me. I thought 3-year-olds like walk around, put their own pants on, and, you know, get some juice out of the refrigerator.
They do.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah. Then never mind, then. That is weird. That is, you know, you bring it up. It is weird. I don't have any experience.
A 3-year-old, like, man? Yeah. They can, at that age, they can brace their fall a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But
put your hands
flat
out.
On your head? Yeah. Nah, come on. Nah.
Well, they thought it was fishy. They just didn't have any proof. It's not like they just accepted it. They just couldn't prove
that. When I hear that, it just sounds so easy, though. They just go up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, she died. They're like, I don't know, man. What? They're like, and then I bet she didn't say that the first day that they found her and took her to the hospital.
Yeah.
3 days later, when she becomes a suspect, she's like, oh, I forgot she fell.
Yeah.
I know I said initially that she just was passed out when I found her, but
yeah.
She fell.
Don't say it was carpet in her room. You come to find out it was carpet. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, her brain just like swelled up and she died from brain swelling because she fell on a carpet at 3. Weird. But again, they thought it was weird. They just didn't have any proof. Okay. After the death of Cassidy Johnson, Falling moved to Lakeland, Florida, and again began babysitting to support herself. Within a few months of her arrival in Lakeland, a 4-year-old boy who was in Falling's care suddenly stopped breathing without any prior signs of illness. The death of Jeffrey Davis was as suspicious as that of Cassidy Johnson. And an autopsy was again ordered. The examination disclosed that the boy had suffered from a condition that caused chronic heart inflammation. However, this was deemed insufficient to be the cause of his death. The medical examiner noted no other potential cause of death, and the case was closed.
What?
So again, they were like, I mean, he does have this heart disease, but it's not deadly on its own. I don't know. Have a nice day again, Christine.
So he died from heart inflammation?
He died from unclear causes. He had heart inflammation, and so they just chalked it up to complications from that. They said we don't know what the other complications are, but there's no way it was just the chronic heart inflammation. So something else happened, but we don't know what it was.
You know, that's not the first time I heard
Inconclusive,
that.
Inconclusive, I guess.
I've heard that before where it was like my brother passed away like 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was like the autopsy came back and it was just like there was no reason.
Inconclusive type of, yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah, it's an odd one. It leaves you unsatisfied because then you never know. It could be foul play. You don't know what could have been.
I was like, how does that? The whole point of the autopsy is to find out what exactly happened. But y'all do that, and we don't know.
Well, this is why people do independent autopsies all the time when they suspect that something happened. Maybe a spouse, you know, closed out the life insurance policy a little too quickly, or you know, somebody left town a little oddly. They'll do an independent autopsy to go further.
Yeah,
you know,
I was like, that is crazy.
Yeah, man. That's really is like you're kind of left in limbo too because you don't really get answers.
Right.
It's all inconclusive.
Yeah.
3 days after the tragedy, the bereaved aunt and uncle of, now this is crazy. The bereaved aunt and uncle of Jeffrey Davis asked Falling to babysit their two-year-old son, Joseph Spring.
The other one?
The aunt and uncle of the little boy that just died.
But it's all in the same family, though.
All in the same family.
After this
mysterious death from this, while this babysitter was there. At the very least, I would want to get a different babysitter because just bad vibes. No. Like she was there, you know.
No.
So the aunt and uncle who were in bereavement asked Christine to babysit their 2-year-old son, Joseph Spring, while they attended Davis's funeral.
You must have. What?
Yes. While his parents were at the services, Joseph inexplicably died while taking a nap.
While he was at?
While they were at the funeral.
Wow.
For Jeffrey Davis.
Wow.
So while they were at the funeral for Jeffrey Davis, Joseph Spring mysteriously died while taking a nap. The local physician speculated that the young boy may have succumbed to a viral infection and that the same mysterious disease may have also accounted for the death of Jeffrey Davis. So that he took that as his missing piece. He was like, I knew Jeffrey Davis couldn't have just died from the heart inflammation. They must have had the same kind of viral disease or maybe they're related, but maybe it's like he's saying it's like chicken pox or something. Like they were in the same room as each other. So they caught some kind of virus together and it ended up killing both of them.
Okay.
That was his missing piece. No investigation into the deaths of the two young boys was ever undertaken. And once again, Falling left the area, this time moving back to Perry, Florida. In July of 1981, Falling found a job as a housekeeper to a 77-year-old invalid named Wilbur Swindle. Also, shout out to Swindled Podcast. On the first day of Falling's new job, Swindle inexplicably died while in his kitchen. On the first day of work, her patient just died in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Allegedly due to a heart attack. Because of his age and poor medical condition, I mean, he did need somebody to take care of him, and he was 77 years old, local authorities did not investigate the elderly man's death. After the mysterious death, Christine went back into infant care. Falling accompanied her stepsister and 8-month-old niece, Jennifer Daniels, on some shopping errands. Daniel's mother left the baby in the car with Falling to make a short stop at the local supermarket. However, when she returned, Daniels found her baby dead and Christine Falling in a panic.
What?
They were in the car. It would be like if you went to go,
yeah.
I'm going to go run into the gas station to put some money on the pump. And then you come back and your kid's dead.
Wow.
According to Falling, the girl had mysteriously stopped breathing. Once again, The death of Jennifer Daniels was determined to be of natural causes and no investigation ensued. Just over a year later, in July of 1982, she was caring for a 10-week-old baby boy named Travis Coleman when he also seemed to die of infant death syndrome. Also, I think that's all. That's like SIDS.
SIDS.
Sudden infant death syndrome. The sudden wasn't on there, but everything else was there. Maybe they don't call it SIDS anymore. I don't know.
They do.
Suspicions had been raised. And again, an autopsy was performed, which seemed to tell a different story. They discovered that Travis had suffered severe internal ruptures, and this added to other signs. Other signs present suggested that the cause of death was more likely to have been by the baby being smothered. Falling was immediately questioned by local law enforcement. After a short stint in medical care, she confessed to murdering three children by what she described as smotheration. Just made up a word. But she had, that's sixth grade education. She's just making
smotheration.
Up smotheration. I've never heard of that. I've heard of holleration in this dancery. I've never heard of smotheration. She claimed that she had heard voices ordering her to murder the children by placing a blanket over their faces. It was decided that it was not going to be easy to prove that the other deaths were her fault as well, so she was only charged with the three deaths that she confessed to, which were Cassidy Johnson, who was the first child, the daughter of her stepsister, and Travis Coleman. She was found guilty of three murders and sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole for at least 25 years.
What about the old man?
They couldn't. They didn't feel like they had the ability to prove it.
The old?
Yeah. You could just go, he died of natural causes. After a few years in prison, she admitted to strangling William Swindle. And after serving 25 years in prison, Falling was eligible for parole in 2007. Her application was denied once, and then again in 2017, in November, it was denied once again. No one supporting Falling attended the parole hearing, and she will be given another parole hearing in 7 years. So that's 2017, that's 2024. Falling was imprisoned at the Homestead Correctional Institution in Homestead, Florida. And my question to you is, because it's just as relevant now in 2021 as it was in 1981. How do you, because Sophia's what? How old is she now? Four?
She's five.
How do you just keep a family? Like, how do you decide who can babysit your kids? How can you ever fully trust anybody?
Anybody?
Because, I mean, that's your most prized possession. Mm-hmm. And you're like, we're going to go to a steakhouse or whatever. Here's our kid for 5 hours. Like, what's your resume? Are you just like, if your family, we trust you? Would you ever hire like a babysitting service or
no? We'd never hire somebody. I would never have somebody watch her outside of somebody I know
very well.
Like, Steph's mom used to babysit her, and then their neighbor babysit her, but they had a close relationship for a long time. But
right,
outside of that, we've not had anybody else that watch.
So no, Babysitters R Us or any apps that have the Babysitters Club.
No. Nobody random. No. No, ain't no way. I guess some people have to.
Some people definitely, I mean, people listening to this are like, fuck you guys. Like, you don't even, but what I'm saying is, I don't have kids, and Fran has, that's your way of finding babysitters.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other people who have used services or local kids and things like that.
See, with family, it's different because by her grandma watching her.
Yeah, that is like no concerns.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
But anybody else is like, because we did have somebody that watched Sophie when she was little. I didn't think about too much of that one. But
right.
Me going to like a spot, like down the street.
Yeah.
Nah, I couldn't.
Or like a thing like, you know, you set it up and then you guys are supposed to go out to dinner at 7 o'clock and then it's like, bing, bong. Yeah, hey, I'm Stacy. And you're like
seeing the movies.
Yeah,
nah,
yeah.
I can't. Nah, I'm not with that.
I just
will be thinking about it too much.
Yeah.
But services like that, like any, like not just daycare, like healthcare type of services.
People
like
taking care of your elderly family.
Yeah, it's just like those, it's like I'm skeptical about those because it's like, if I'm going to use those services, I want to make sure that those people, that's what they love to do.
Yeah.
It's not just doing a job. It for a paycheck.
Because
that's where
you get annoyed.
I don't trust it because now they half-ass and shit. I'm just here just because I can get this check.
Yeah.
I don't like that too much.
I get that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, I feel like that's more common than not that somebody's like, I just found out about this job. So, and it pays.
Yeah.
But, Yeah, man, I feel like with a babysitting service, if it was me, I don't have kids, so what does my opinion even matter? But if I had kids and I was, if I had to use a babysitting service, which I think I'm fortunate enough, I'm one of the lucky people who are like, my mom's still alive and can't wait for us to have kids and all that kind of, I feel like I have people, a support system.
Yeah.
But everybody can't say that, right?
Yeah.
If I did have to hire a babysitting service, I would let them know right out of the gates. Like, so there's cameras everywhere, but I'd do it nicely, like, you know, just to keep them on their toes, to let them know, hey, we do have surveillance around the house. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just to make sure everybody's safe and everything like that, in case anything goes wrong, I would phrase it like that. In case anything goes wrong, there's an intruder or something like that, we'll have it all caught on camera for your safety and for our kids' safety. Yeah. Also, it's like, this is a job for...
They can clean you out.
Not to be sexist, but this is a job for me, for like 15-year-old girls.
Okay.
Boy or girl, my kid. I'm saying, I don't want some man in my house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With my child.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so this is a job for like a freshman in high school or something, you know? Or like a that Nanny 911 show, or like a 40-year-old Mary Poppins type.
Yeah.
You know, but I definitely would not want a 40-year-old man watching my kid.
Oh, of course not.
I don't know what that is. I know what it is. I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't feel like most people would feel comfortable with like a man being the babysitter of their kid. Like, yeah, especially like an uncle, cool, but like a stranger man from a service. I wonder what the statistics are that of those babysitting services. Yeah, it's like 95% women.
Because they would go, wow, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's a little sexist.
That's sexist as hell.
Yeah, but it's like,
what are you? It's like, I love kids. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you're the most, and it's like, no, man, I just love kids. Yeah. I get along great with kids, and I like to entertain kids. They're like, yeah, man, no, you're a freak. Get out. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is just inherently odd.
Yes.
Even if the guy's just the most innocent dude in the world, he's like, no, even in my scenario, it sounds creepy. Like, he could mean it as innocent as one's like, kids just bring me so much joy and they make me happy. I just love being around kids. You're like, ugh.
What if they gay? Get out. What if they gay though?
What does gay matter?
It gives off a different feeling.
I guess. I see what you're saying, but I think that a man in general, just any man, it would feel it. I would, and again, it's like,
sure.
Even if they're not, we're not saying like they are bad. Yeah. I'm just saying for me, I would go, no. Like if you're doing the montage of people, like, you know, in the movies where it's like, we're trying to find the perfect babysitter.
Yeah.
It'll be like, teenage girl, okay, thanks, we'll give you a call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 45-year-old woman, thanks, we'll give you a call. And then like a dude, gay, straight, whatever. Like, yeah, I just love kids. I love being around kids. We're like, yeah, thanks for coming. You don't get the we'll give you a call. Like, thanks for coming. And then you just scratch them off the list. Yeah. I don't know what that is. And I know that's inherent sexism, because I'm sure there's men who would not mind babysitting. That sounds like a pretty easy gig, but it's like,
babysitting my children.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't know where you're gonna find this job. Maybe some really progressive people who are like, we're trying to make sure that men can babysit too.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, that's cool. That's a very small market of people as well.
Yeah. We'll be here.
Yeah, I don't know. That makes me uncomfortable. And again, I don't even have kids. But again, I don't think anybody will hire me. Especially, I got this mustache. My mom said I look creepy.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know, man.
Why do you still have it?
It's just pandemic, man. It's just I'm trying stuff out, just like kind of just like fuck it. Well, in reality, I told you the reality. The reality was I was going to go visit Poe to make the video that I made.
Yeah.
And while I was cutting my beard to trim it down, the clippers died.
Yeah.
But we had to go. So I just lathered up my face and I was like, I'll just cut everything off but the mustache. I didn't want to cut off everything, because when I cut off my facial, I look like Homer Simpson.
Did Sierra go with you?
Yeah.
What did she say? We walked out.
She said, like, oh, that's different. And I was like, I don't know.
In a nice way?
Yeah.
Because she's super nice?
Nice enough. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I like it. And she's like, okay. But listen, I've got some good responses. I got some bad responses. You know, like, it's a mixed bag.
What are the good responses?
Good responses is, like, kind of cool. It's different.
Okay.
You know, nobody's like, damn, man, you look great. But it's like, oh, okay, cool, mustache.
Yeah.
It's just, like, different, right? And the other ones are like, you look like a molester or some kind of pervert or something like that. That's from my mom. My mom said that to me.
Yeah.
So that was great to hear. And so, but the point is, I don't think if I showed up to somebody's house with this mustache, they'd be like, yeah, come on in here and look after my children.
Yeah.
Don't be out here disrespecting,
man.
Yeah, no, I can see it in your eyes, though, man. Like,
what?
People with mustaches are not creepy. Some of them are.
We got the Pizza Boy mustache stuff. No, man.
Not Pizza Boy mustache, but Pizza Boy wishes their mustache should get this full. This is like off my lip. This is a 3D mustache. It's not some kind of hairline, barely there mustache.
I got a Pizza Boy.
I got a whole caterpillar on my mustache, on my lip right now, man.
You should have just brought it all the way down like you had in Halloween.
No. That's a costume look. I can't go around with the Hulk Hogan brother. Anyway, That was the story of Michelle falling, man.
That was nuts.
I mean, Christine falling, sorry. Christine falling, what a story. I mean, listen, just the crazy thing is like, be careful about who you bring around your kids, but sometimes it's family. Like, you just never know. It really is a gamble.
Maybe her fees was low.
Oh, that's definitely, it has to be a part of it. Like, she had to be not only, it was like, she's reliable, she'll be there on time because she wants to kill your kid. That's why she'll be there. She loves this. Of course she'll be there. Yeah, she'll be there on time, of course. Like, she can't wait to get there and kill your kid. So, yeah, she's despicable. Christine Falling is a disgusting human being. And I hope her parole gets denied every time it comes up. And, you know, maybe, you know, she'll die. Anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into some more fucked up shit. So stick around.
Welcome back. It's my turn to go. My affirmative murder this week is about the death of Tzatzi Sanchez.
Can you spell that?
T-Z-A-T-Z-I.
Tzatzi.
Yep. So this is a love triangle story here.
Okay.
So we know how those go.
Very dramatic.
Very dramatic. One always comes out on the other end of the stick. They always end up short-handed.
Yeah.
And then that turns into retaliation, yep, death, which happens in this story. Unfortunately, so here we go. So in Las Vegas, Nevada, in January 15th, 2001, police receive a frantic 911 call from a man claiming his roommate had been murdered.
Mm.
When officers arrived, they found a horrific scene. A woman was lying face down on the bed, hands are tied behind her back with an electrical cord. She appears to have been strangled and sexually assaulted.
Mm.
And detectives say she endured a lot of pain and her death was not quick.
Jeez.
So the victim was identified as 27-year-old Tzatzi Sanchez, a freshman from Mexico attending University of Nevada. On top of her body was a ticket stub from a romantic comedy movie that was called What Women Want. That was left on her body, on her dead body.
So this is like 99-2000?
2001. Yep. They said the calling card that the ticket that was left was odd. But when they found out that she was gay, they kind of started putting the pieces together.
Okay.
And what kind of case they was dealing with. Also, they figured that the ticket that was left, the killer was playing a sick joke and that the victim possibly knew her killer.
Mm, okay, because like it's like a play on words or yep, something. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hilarious.
So Tzatzi, house was ransacked. Mm-hmm. Her roommate confirms that her computer, TVs, and a Cartier watch was stolen, and a few other things. Detectives noticed several windows had pry marks on them, which means there was some type of forced entry.
Right.
The crime scene all had earmarks of a home invasion and robbery gone bad. Also, her car was stolen.
Damn.
Yep.
Probably put all her stuff in her car.
Yeah.
Cold.
So investigators start to dig and Tzatzi's past, and discovered she was a happy-go-lucky, hard-working young woman, and she was working as a waitress to pay her way through college. One day, Tzatzi meets two fellow Mexicans at work. So she was a waitress, and she's waiting on these two young ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And they strike up an instant friendship. Those two other ladies were Marcella Wiley and her lover, Kimberlyn Estrada, who just arrived in Sin City and are looking for somewhere to stay. Which is crazy to just be like, you can come stay with us. You can come stay with me.
Vegas is that kind of town, man. Vegas is really interesting because it's one of those kind of places where you can make six figures being a bartender.
Yeah.
You know, that's why when you said Cartier watch, I had to remember it's like Las Vegas. I was like, okay, she's a waitress, but you can make bank as a waitress. And so it's all these transplants. And then it's also like local people, but it's so incestuous. Like you work at these bars, you're up all night. Most of the time it's like in the inverse, like you work from, you know, 8 p.m. to 7 a.m. or crazy. So you're always out in the night. So you're always meeting these people, drinking, doing drugs, having a crazy time. So when you find another person who's like, oh, I'm in town to do that too. It's like, oh, cool. What bar are you working at?
Yeah.
The Golden Nugget. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, you can come. I'm looking for a roommate. Because people just pass through.
Yeah.
It's like just constantly revolving. It's really interesting. My grandmother tried to get me to move out there and do that shit.
To be a bartender?
She wanted me to go to like fucking like counter school and become like a table person. I can't even do basic math.
You want me to run? What the hell is a table? Like run a blackjack table?
Oh, like in a casino?
Yeah.
Okay. They make a lot of money.
Yeah. Tips and stuff. They make good money. And why? But it also was a point where I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Why didn't you do it?
Because I was like, I didn't want to move to Vegas. I didn't want to do that, especially like do math all day. Yeah. No.
You probably get a hang of it after a while. Be quick with it.
I don't want to get a hang of doing math. Okay. That's not a thing I'm into. Hey, man.
So Marcella and Kimberlyn tell Satsi they have been together for 6 years, and they basically becomes best friends.
Yeah,
just those three.
So after that night, they became friends for the next 6 years.
No. Marcella and Kimberlyn were together.
Oh, there. Oh, okay. Got it.
That's what it came up in the conversation.
Got it.
Yeah. So then they all just became best friends, and Satsi invites them to stay at her place.
Right.
That was just the type of person that Satsi was, always willing to help other people out whenever she could.
Right.
So at first, the trio had a blast living together for 3 months. No. They had a blast living together, like three best friends that had known each other forever.
Right.
But Marcella Wiley has a reputation of meeting new women she finds attractive and turning them into her lesbian lover. Mm. It's not an easy thing to do, but she had become a master at it. And Marcella used all her tricks to make herself seem irresistible. And when Kimberlyn finds them in bed, so they end up sleeping together.
Marcella and Satsi.
Satsi, yeah. So when Kimberlyn finds them in bed, she moves out. So she was hurt.
Yeah.
She moves out because she was hurt and felt betrayed. Mm-hmm. And because of her and Marcella had been a couple for years, and it all ended in tears. So it was just they was together, and then Marcella was just doing her thing.
Right.
As she does. Mm-hmm. And moved on. So Satsi soon starts to realize that any feelings she has for her new lover are not reciprocated. This has been a game, and Satsi is the one that's being played in this game. Mm. Now Satsi finds Marcella is becoming something of a nightmare to live with. She's telling Satsi what she can do and what she can't do.
Oh.
So she was living in fear. So Satsi feels that there is only one person she can go to talk to that would understand what she's going through, and that's Kimberlyn.
Okay.
Yep.
It's not really a great idea.
Yeah. So after their talk, Kimberlyn quickly abandons any feelings or animosity and jealousy that they had, and they quickly become lovers, those two.
I'm calling fishy shenanigans on this situation.
Yeah.
I don't even believe that this is the real story.
So Satsi and Marcella broke up, before those two started hooking up with each other.
Mm.
So now those two have a happy relationship that is the complete opposite of what Satsi and Marcella's relationship was. And soon the three of them begin living under the same roof again.
I already knew that.
So she came back.
As now Kimberlyn and Satsi are coming through the apartment to go to Satsi's room. While Marcella's on the couch.
Yeah, that's just a whole...
Yeah, that's a mess. That's a big mess.
And then it comes up later, but Kimberlyn and Marcella, share a car, and they work at the same place.
Oh,
geez. It's a mess. So Marcella and Kimberlyn return home from work one day and learn that they learned about Satsi's horrific murder. And they are both questioned separately by investigators.
Mm-hmm.
So Kimberlyn was very upset and confirmed she was Satsi's lover.
Yep.
And Marcella also seems very distraught. And reveals her and Satsi broke up months before this, and she had no. And she told police, she assured that there was no negative energy going on between me and Satsi, and I wish them the best on their relationship.
Yeah,
yeah, you know all this bullshit. So they both had alibis. Mm. They left the house around 6:30 a.m. and was seen at work all day. Plus, they said that the killer had to be a male. So autopsy confirms that Satsi, was strangled and sexually assaulted.
Okay. Well.
You should know where this is going.
Yeah, but. Yeah, that doesn't mean anything that she was sexually assaulted.
What? I'm talking about.
I'm saying that it had to be a man. I'll let you finish, but that part. Yeah, no.
Oh, you mean that.
I mean, they are lesbians. I don't know if you can tell the difference between being penetrated by a foreign object, a sex toy.
Maybe some kind of
strap
something?
On or something like that. I don't know. I guess maybe there's DNA evidence.
Yeah,
there.
Maybe.
I was just saying, because my mind is it was Marcella. But it's if she was sexually assaulted, if there's DNA evidence, then that's how they would know.
Yeah.
But because I'm they could use a strap on to sexually assault somebody.
Yeah. But I feel like that's a lot of work, though.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying for you to to try to go and kill somebody and then rob them and all that. You go through all that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, so he's saying that they confirmed that she was strangled and sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. Then there was a break in the case. So detectives got an anonymous call from a tipster saying Totsi's car was stolen and parked 15 miles away from the crime scene. Mm-hmm. They searched for fingerprints and other evidence, but they also noticed that Totsi's car is parked less than a quarter mile from a company that that both Marcella and Kimberly work at.
Right.
So detectives asked Marcella and Kimberly, do they have any idea why her car was parked so close to their workplace? And they both claimed they didn't know. So 9 days after the murder, a man named Rodrigo Maida mm-hmm. calls police and reveals he was the anonymous tipster who directed police to the stolen car and also claims that he knows info about the murder. And he called and said that, you know, I want to be anonymous. I know where the car is and I know who killed, right? So then he calls again mm-hmm. and he comes forward with more information and he was scared because he came forward and told who he was because he was an illegal alien.
He
didn't want to be involved in
the murder.
The murder. So he says he was afraid to come forward before because he was an illegal alien and he was ready to speak and that he could identify Totsi's killer. Mm. So Rodrigo says a coworker named Luis Barroso told him that he was involved in the murder, gave him several pieces of jewelry and showed him the car, the stolen car, mm-hmm. and asked him to help him sell the stolen items. Mm. So Maida, who was Rodrigo,
yeah.
didn't want to be a part of the crime, so he turned everything in that he had to the police.
Right.
He also identified another employee named Abid Maroquin, mm-hmm. and who was his partner in the crime.
Yeah.
So when Kimberly confirms that was Totsi's jewelry, and police obtained search warrants for the two men at their house. So when they searched the home,
so they're still treating Kimberly like they brought her in to identify.
Since she was saying she was Totsi's lover.
Yeah.
They was going to her asking like, hey, is this
her jewelry?
Is this her jewelry? And yeah. she confirms that, and they go, okay, we got a search warrant on those two guys' house.
Okay.
Guys that supposedly be a part of the murder.
Yeah.
Who committed the murder? So when they searched the home, they found numerous items of Totsi's, including her cell phone, computer, and a camcorder. Mm-hmm. And then, then police arrested Luis Barroso and Abid Ameriquin and bring them in for questioning. So they arrested both of them.
Right.
So when they tell them that, look, we got the evidence against you guys that, you know, you are involved and you were there. And then they told them that, hey, you guys are facing the death penalty. They talked. They were like, okay.
Tell you everything.
We're going to tell you everything. We're going to tell you everything. So Barroso confessed that he was involved in the murder, but he said that he wasn't the mastermind of the whole thing. So in this whole situation, Marcella was the loser in the situation, and she was so used to getting her way.
Yeah.
And she felt betrayed, and she also felt like a loser, and she was determined to say, hey, you know, I'm going to retaliate. I'm going to get back.
Right.
I'm going to get back on top. So Barroso said Marcella met him at work and says, hey, I want to hire you to kill Totsi.
Yes.
And she bribed him with $3,000.
Wow.
I guess he needed the money. I don't know.
Yeah, but also he sexually assaulted her, though. So that's like, that wasn't, I'm sure she didn't go like, yeah, and rape her, too.
Well.
So like he.
Hold on. So Totsi bribed him for $3,000 and offered him sex, right? So this would have been her first. They were saying she was gay.
Right.
So obviously it was just like, I'm throwing
this. This is transactional.
Yeah, this is transactional. And she probably didn't do it. This probably was just like, she knows.
Tell her.
It would work.
Yeah.
But she didn't. And she just wanted her killed and want her to be humiliated and sexually assaulted by a man.
Oh, she asked for it to her to do that?
Yep.
Oh, that's despicable.
Yep.
Wow. For a woman to do that is so evil.
Yeah. But they were saying that the ticket, the what women want thing,
yeah.
was just like a add-on.
Totsi just happened to go see.
No. The guy was just like, he did that on his own.
Oh.
Like, that was just something extra he did.
Just put some sauce on it. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's evil as shit,
yeah.
man. God yep. damn.
Yep. So while the murder
is... So he just happened to have a ticket to...
I don't know. I don't know if it was in the house and like by them stealing shit. They just came across and was like, "Oh, I'm gonna just put this here.
My calling card."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
That's crazy as shit.
Yep. So while the murder is happening, Marcella made it clear. So she, you know, the videos, they got like reenactments. So she's like out, you know. So she wanted to make it clear that she had been seen, so that'd be her alibi why this thing was going on.
She's being extra loud and having a good time.
So Kimberlyn said Marcella, they went to work one day and they shared the car they go to work in. So she took off while they were at work, took all her things. And when Kimberlyn got back to the place, all her stuff was gone.
Yeah.
So they was like, the investigators go, hey, she probably escaped to Mexico. Lewis goes to trial in 2004, I'm sorry, and is charged with 10 felony charges, first degree murder, sexual assault and kidnapping, and convicted on all counts, and gets life in prison without parole. 3 months later, Abid pleads guilty to the first degree murder and kidnapping, and gets life with possibility of parole after 40 years.
Mm.
So Marcella did, you know, run off to Mexico,
but not with Kimberlyn.
No.
But she made it look that way. Is that what you said?
No. She just left. Oh. They was at work, and she just got her shit and left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she ran off with the car and just went to Mexico.
Got it.
She's trying to get away. So she ended up going to Mexico, but they said when she got there, so you know when you hear people run off to Mexico to try to get away, they keep a low profile.
Yeah.
She didn't do that because she was just so used to winning all the time.
Yeah.
And so she was confident on she got away with this thing. She goes to Mexico and get a job as a TV reporter. So
on TV?
On TV.
Wow.
She gets a job as a TV reporter.
That's like the opposite of staying
low. Yeah. Yeah, complete opposite. So she gets a job as a TV reporter. So they find her immediately.
Yeah.
They find her immediately. So they charge her with conspiracy to commit first degree murder. But, you know, so her by going to Mexico, they was like, you know, in the other case, they go, you know, Mexico, we can't charge you.
Yeah. They got to extradite you.
That, but the Mexico said that we are going to charge her because Satsi was Mexican.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
So they was like, no, we're going to charge you.
Wow.
So they decided to charge her on their case since Tati was Mexican, which I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, wow.
And November 2005, Marcella Wiley is convicted of murder and sentenced to 37 years in a Mexico prison.
Mm. The Federales.
Yeah, so I know that's rough. I know just based on, you know, just
I watched him locked TVs up abroad.
Yes. Yeah. I know she probably wish she would have stayed in. You know,
I mean, I wouldn't want to be in any prison. I bet she would have wished she just would have calmed the fuck down and took her L and that she got her girl stolen.
Yeah, she wanted to be an extra. And
that's despicable to be like, and I want you to rape her.
Yeah.
I want her to be had sexually assaulted by a man.
Yep.
Because she stole my girlfriend.
Yep.
That's despicable.
Yeah, yeah. That's evil. So that was my, I've heard a murder about, rest in peace, Satsi Sanchez.
Rest in peace, Satsi Sanchez, man.
Yeah, it's just.
That's so evil.
That's a dangerous game, man.
It's a thin line between love and hate.
Yeah.
That's very true. It's very true. I mean, that love can go so hard that as soon as it goes bad, it's like you have so much love for them that it immediately flips to like anger because you're so mad that they won't love you back or whatever, you know, and you end up with situations like this, man.
Yes. That's crazy.
She could have worked at any restaurant. She could have worked any
shift.
And I
was just about to say that, like, that's the crazy part. Like, you hear these stories and it's like that. A friendship that starts when you being at work just like any other night turns into could lead to your death.
Yep. She could have called out that night.
Crazy.
Anything could have happened.
That's wild.
She could have not, it's even more finite than that. She could have just not taken that section.
Yeah.
She could have just had another section that night. That small difference, in a situation like that, that small little difference would have altered the entire outcome of
that's
all
wild.
Of this.
It's like when you go right all the time, you just go left that one time and just. Yep. That's just when you hear shit like that. It's just like, that's wild and it's terrifying.
Yeah, I don't really know. I'm always wondering if I believe in fate, or if you know free will, and or if everything's predetermined. It's always hard to tell. But when you hear stories like this, it's like, you know, all just kind of lined up in this way.
That's how I used to think. I used to think when I was younger, I used to just had random thoughts, and I used to think that like when we were born on this earth or whatever, it's like God goes. All this is going to happen to you.
Yep.
And I just always think that.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes I do.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I go, I don't know. Like,
I'm not locked
into anyone. Is it just like coincidence, or is it like a numbers game? Is it just like a percent? It's like, it's just like, it's like when you hear like car accidents, it's like,
yeah.
You know, cars didn't go like, you know, what if you would have stopped at that red light?
What if you got up late for work?
Like, any, like,
or
that's
what
crazy.
If you didn't get up late?
Or
for
what
work,
if you, you did?
Know?
Or what if you, what if you got stopped at the light before that and then make it to that? Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's crazy, man.
I fall on different sides of that belief. Minute to minute,
yeah, for sure.
Scenario
for
by sure. the scenario in my life, yeah. where I'm like, something good happens to me. I'm like, some as in a depressing way. I go, cool, cool, cool. That's why I'm a lot of times, like when cool stuff happens to me, I'm always like, I go straight to the next thing
because
I'm like, cool, cool, cool. I manifested that already. I already knew we would get to here,
so
I'm already on to the next thing
yeah.
instead of sitting in that because that should feel like what.
Yeah,
like that's an accomplishment. That's crazy. But I'm like, no, no, no. I already knew we would get to this. So now I got to go to the next thing on my board because I already knew that was going to happen. I've manifested this and I planned this. You know, I feel like a lot of people might feel like that way on the day they graduate.
Yeah.
You know, all the college and everything was hard. You didn't know if you were going to pass this test and everything.
Yeah.
But when you walk across that stage, I bet it's like, okay, what's next? I bet you don't sit in that moment very long because it's like, yeah, I did the work. I knew this was going to happen. This is what you do the work. You go to the classes, you're supposed to get to here.
Yeah.
So I already knew this doesn't feel like, what, I graduated? You don't feel shocked by it. So you're already moving on to the next thing. So I think feel like people should just sit in those moments a little bit more.
For sure.
Who knows, man? That's a difficult one. What we're going to do is we're going to get into these good vibes, though, so we can get up out of here.
Welcome to our good vibe segment. It's my turn to go first. So I don't know how many of our listeners keep up with the football, let alone the sports at all, but
sure. We definitely got some sports fans.
Yeah. So the Buffalo Bills, right?
Yeah, Buffalo Bills.
What do I call them?
Yes. Well, they never do anything.
I call them the New York Bills.
Yeah.
Buffalo Bills and Baltimore Ravens, you know, where we're from. Mm-hmm. I had a playoff game last night. And so the Buffalo Bills fans donated to Lamar Jackson, who was the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens, donated money to
Phenom.
Yeah, donated money to Lamar Jackson's charity.
Yeah.
So thousands of fans are celebrating the Buffalo Bills' first trip to the AFC Championship game since 1993.
Wow.
I was two.
Yes.
1993 season in a unique way. By donating tens of thousands of dollars to the charity that Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson supported during his college career at Louisville. Shortly after Buffalo's 17-3 victory Saturday night over the Ravens, a game in which Jackson left during the second half to enter a concussion protocol. Hope he's okay.
Yeah. Right also, then. Y'all, stop with these shit jokes, man. Like, keep catching this dude tiptoeing to the locker room and they keep being like, oh, he had the shit again. Like, let that man live, man. He had a concussion. He had to go get a concussion protocol. Yeah, he didn't have to go take a shit.
I didn't see that one.
Jeez. You didn't see the first time when he got hurt and then he came back out
and he
won
the
game? That's what they said because they caught him running to the back locker room, but he was running like on his tippy toes.
Oh,
it looked
shit.
Like his butt was clenched.
I didn't see that, nah.
Man, come on, man. Let it go.
So, yeah, after he entered the concussion protocol, momentum was generated among Bills fans online to show support for Jackson by supporting the blessings in a backpack, Louisville chapter. It started around 11:30 last night, and our donation box just started flooding with donations from Bills fans for Lamar. It's just been overwhelming in the best possible way. And this was said Nikki Grizzle of Blessings in the Backpack, whose mission is to mobilize communities, individuals, and resources to provide food on the weekends for elementary school children across America who might otherwise go hungry. According to Grizzle, as of noon Eastern time on Sunday, 2,500 individual donations have been received, totaling over $75,000.
Damn.
And this isn't the first time, this is what I was telling you about, this isn't the first time the Bills fans, affectionately known as the Bills Mafia, have gathered together with a charitable heart. At the end of 2017 regular season, when quarterback Andy Dalton led the Cincinnati Bengals to win that helped the Bills qualify for the playoffs. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Bills qualify for the playoffs. They did something similar for Dalton. Bills fans also donated tens of thousands of dollars earlier this season to Oasis Children's Hospital. I don't know how to say that. Sorry. After it was announced that the quarterback Josh Allen's grandmother had died.
Mm.
Grizzle described what was unfolded since Saturday night in one word. Amazing, she said. it said it just keeps rolling in. So it's not the first time the Buffalo Bills have donated money to charity.
That's a really we had talked off air about if that's a troll or not. If that's a troll, that's a really awesome troll.
I'll take it.
I think it's really just genuine though. I think because, like, where's the ownage?
Yeah. Buffalo Bills fans don't, I don't think, don't have a bad rep, I don't think.
I don't think so either. They don't. So, they always have a good time. I think they go up there, they slam each other through tables. They do like wrestling shit at the tailgates.
That's a good time? Oh, you mean like, oh, just having fun?
Yeah, just having fun. Oh. They have a good time. I'm sure they're very excited to be in the playoffs. And, you know, congratulations to them. And also shout out to their fan base. That's really fucking cool that they did that.
Yeah, that's
dope. I also got a notification on the Facebook group that somebody said they donated $25 in our name. I don't know if they literally did, but like,
our name to who?
To the backpack thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they literally meant in our name or if it's just because we're from Baltimore and that reminded them.
Yeah.
I think it might have been more of that. Either way, if you donate to kids getting food and backpacks, that's awesome. Like, however the money's getting there, that's really fucking awesome. Shout out to the Bills fans. That's a really cool thing that's a cool way to celebrate. Like, hey man, yeah, we beat you. Here's some charitable goods. But whatever, you know, whatever. However they got to get it in their pocket, that's awesome. My good vibe story this week is a little more personal, friend. I've been going to a bar called Zen West since I was about 21. I was 21, Fran. I was 21. Yeah. I was only going there when I was legally allowed to go in there and drink. So since I was 21, I've been going to Zen West. So the better part of the last decade, I've been going there. Mm-hmm. And it's owned by a really cool guy named Po Chang. He's a very generous guy. As a matter of fact, he's currently doing a food drive in the midst of all this shit. He's collecting cans and perishable goods to donate to food banks, you know, in the state. So, mm-hmm. Even while all this crazy shit is going on, business is shut down. Maryland is currently in the middle of no capacity mandate. Like, you can't, we were at like 50% and that was fluctuating, but now it's takeout only once again. And, you know, restaurants, bars like that make money from people sitting at the bar, having a good time and having some drinks all day. That's where the real bread is buttered in that kind of industry.
Yeah.
And Po Chang is going through a bit of a rough time right now with Zen West, and that hurts my heart because that place means so much to me. I put together a small video where I stated that, you know, without Zen West, I would have never met my fiance. I would have never met Sierra. She was a bartender there. Les, our good friend Les, friend of the podcast, was a bouncer there. Me and Les worked together, and he told me one day, hey, man, after work, we're going to go to Zen West. You should come hang out with us at Zen West. And from there, that just became like a second home to me. I had a great times, many great times there, and Po Chang's a really awesome dude. And so I along with Sierra put together a couple of videos, and I put together a GoFundMe to help protect Zen West. We're recording on a Sunday. It was 2 days ago. We have raised over $10,000 for Zen West and for Po Chang to protect Zen West, and that means a lot to me. I'm still kind of in disbelief that we got that much money that fast. The goal is $15,000, so it's still, you know, we're still going to be pushing it and promoting it and, you know, calling on people to donate what they can. It's greatly appreciated, but it really is incredible. I also want to give a quick shout out to some Loyola alumni, Frank Lee Camley and Tim Adelino. They are doing this thing called Chug Fest for Zen West, where they are, for every $15 donation they get from a Loyola alumni, they are going to chug a beer on camera. Bang. You know, shotgun it, bang. And this kid, Tim, I've seen him shotgun like 15 beers since last night. They started it right before the Ravens game, and we're just going every time a $15 donation came. And they raised, just Loyola, they raised about $4,000 of that money.
Wow.
From people donating, because they just, you know, made it a fun thing, and people chipping in $15 incrementally. And it really, it's really cool. And I have a lot of faith that we're going to reach our goal, because we got a third of the way there in 2 days. So, yeah, man, protect local restaurants, protect small businesses how we can. If there's a place that means a lot to you, look up on, see if they're on Uber Eats or on Grubhub, and just order some food, man. You know, that helps too. Whatever you can do to keep these places alive, because we want to see these places make it to the other side of this whole COVID-19 thing, man. I would really I would love to go and have a drink and enjoy a live show at Zen West when all this is over. So I'm just doing my part to make sure that can happen.
Yeah.
That was my good vibes. I really felt it was, we make jokes and shit on here about, oh man, I would never start a GoFundMe. I don't want to be responsible for the money and all that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't. But when I found out that, Zen West was going through some rough times, I was like, well, we have this platform. I have a camera, so why not see what happens?
Yeah.
So that was really cool. Shout out to everybody that made a donation. Again, shout out to Ashley T for donating, not only subscribing to our Patreon, but she made a very nice donation to the Protect Zen West Fund on GoFundMe. And I really greatly appreciate anybody who did that. That's really fucking cool. Friend.
Also, so what is the limit?
$15,000 is the goal.
So what do we go past? What do we have to go past that?
If it goes past that, then it goes past that. I'll probably close it if close we hit 15? The goal. Yeah, I'll probably.
That's dope.
Yeah, that's really, it's really crazy, man. I didn't expect, I was going to set it at 10 initially, but then Sierra was like, you should set it at 20. And I was like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And then so we just split the difference and we set it at 15. Okay. And now we're 2 days into it and we're at 10 and hopefully get to 15. And, you know, Poe is creating jobs for those people to just keep them working and keep them on staff. Like he's gutting out walls in Zen West and knocking stuff down to give the cooks other income.
Yeah.
You know, just to keep the lights on, man.
I've met him. He's a cool dude.
Yeah, Poe Chang.
And the wings of fire.
Yeah, oh, super cool dude. Also, yeah, anybody in the Baltimore area listening to this, like, I mean, if you're in the Baltimore area, I wouldn't say if you're in, like, fucking Columbia, Maryland, don't do it because they'll be shitty by the time they get to you. But if you're in the Baltimore area, they are open. Like, you can Grubhub or order up whatever, some Zen West wings. They're really delicious. Yeah. And you can get margaritas to go. If you go in, you can get margaritas to go. So you,
so can you can't even sit in there now, right?
No. You can't sit in anywhere. You cannot sit in any restaurants. That's like the death.
No restaurants or bars. People sit at bars.
They're not supposed to. If they are, they're not supposed to.
They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, well.
You're like, it's zero capacity. You're not supposed to have people in your restaurant.
I go to one every day and they ain't sitting down. So.
Hey, man. Well, how about you don't say the place?
And get it for one. Say no. That's
okay. That's good. other than that, I don't really have any other news or anything like that. We did get some packages to the P.O. box. We have three packages sitting right here. What we're going to do is we're going to do another affirmative mailbox video because that was very fun. You know, it happened to be very fun because we also got crazy candies and stuff, and that turned into this whole insane taste testing thing. But I'm also excited to see what's inside of these boxes. So we'll probably release another affirmative mailbox video next month just to, you know, give you guys some extra content. But We'll open the things now so we can get everybody's name, and then next week we'll give everybody who, you know, we got mail from a shout out, and then you can expect to see the actual video of us seeing what's in there and everything next month. And to anybody, I don't know, because I don't feel like anybody would send us something personal where it's like, I don't want you to record that I sent you this. I hope not. I mean, I don't want anything crazy, right? But I'm just letting people know, like, you know, once we accumulate a certain amount of packages, we'll probably open them up on camera. That'll probably be a thing that we do. So please don't send us anything like, you know, this was the shirt of a boy that was murdered and I thought you guys would want to keep that. Don't send anything weird, because we're gonna put it on camera, man, and we're gonna like say your name. So let's keep it fun.
I don't want anything like that at all. Yeah, I don't.
Is that how I made it? Is that how I framed it? Like,
we'll take it.
We'll take it, but no, I won't put it on camera. No, don't send us that kind of stuff, period. But, again, we're very appreciative to anybody who sends us anything. This is really cool. It's super awesome. We're appreciative to the people that sent us the Kit Kats, some of them anyway, most of them. Sweet potato ones.
Gross.
They were a little crazy. And the cheesecake ones.
Just to talk about this again, I don't think people realize how far this has become.
Yeah,
this has came
for sure,
because we didn't even like.
No. No.
And I want people to realize, like, we are very fortunate. We, you know, thank you guys for listening and sending stuff in, because where's that now? Was never in the.
I had no expectations, man. I mean, we went from one mic.
Literally one mic.
Bad. Everything sounded bad. I mean, I still can't listen to those early episodes. So to think about where we are now, to think about people from all over the country, all over the world, you know, just shouting us out, it's really cool. Also, shout out to everybody who went to that Capitol building with a cell phone on you, because
you're an idiot.
They coming for you. They said they got some kind of equipment where it's like some Batman shit. Like, we just flip the button and it just pings every phone
for real
that was in the Capitol building.
I mean, it's the government.
I don't know what they.
You know some people that drove, that got on a jet, and
yeah, she got arrested.
That is she got on
a private plane.
That's wild.
She got on a private plane to go somewhere to be like, you guys are keeping us from succeeding in life, and we're poor, and everything. She got on a private plane to go to that thing.
That is wild. I was like, that is insane.
Sickos, man. It's been all kind of crazy videos, man. But at this point, again, I'm so disaffected by it, that I'm back to a point where I can laugh at it. So I have been enjoying. There's like new footage coming out of them. They were taking camera footage of like documents on desks. Like, we're going to use this against them. Like, again, where? You think a court is going to let you come to court and like what? Sue the government? Are you going to you're going to bring these people to justice in court? Then we're going to use these as documentation for when we bring them to trial. They were delusional as fuck, man. It was a horde of delusional idiots. Yep. And I'm enjoying seeing them getting round up, you know, fuck them. What we're going to do is get up out of here, man. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Franco Evans, and we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces.